Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and I'm having an affair. With suspense.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I'm gonna tumble dry my way to the truth.
Alright. Today we watched episode 2 of Castle, Nanny McDead.
Is that what it was called, or is that just you?
Yeah, that's not a good episode name.
No, I thought that was doing a subpar goof.
No, like, what is that? Is it like a Nanny McPhee thing or something?
I think that's the only thing I can think of. Was Nanny McPhee topical when this episode came out?
When this episode came out in 2009. When did Nanny McPhee come out?
Oh, that sounds about right.
Released in 2005.
Oh, God.
So I guess that's probably, like, kind of still in the collective consciousness.
Yeah, no, that's a really bad episode title.
Yep. A sequel was released in 2010 entitled Nanny McPhee and the Big Bang.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of then.
Oh, critical response to the film was positive. I did not expect that. So, we're back with Castle.
We are. Who are our new people of interest this week?
Well, returning from last week, we have, of course, Nathan Fillion as the Punisher.
Absolutely.
He declared war on crime when his family was killed by criminals, and now all the other superheroes don't like him very much.
Oh, is that really the Punisher's backstory? That's really sad.
Pretty much, yeah.
Does he have any superhero friends?
I think Spider-Man doesn't hate him.
Aw.
But they don't like how he kills people, because most people superheroes don't do that.
Oh, okay, that's fair. Is he one of the Dirty Avengers?
No, but he was in Daredevil Season 2.
Ah.
Who is one of them.
Well, good. I've got that sorted.
Case closed. He's Richard Castle, not Frank Castle, who is a writer who has forced himself on a detective. That sounds bad.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, who has, like, forced a detective to hang out with him. Because, let's be honest, that's what they're doing. They're just hanging out.
Yeah, basically.
And that detective is Stana Katic as Kate Beckett. She's tough. She's no nonsense.
She doesn't have time for a man, but she definitely will have time for Castle in future seasons, let me tell you. The sexual tension is thick.
She might be one of the least nonsense characters we've seen on these shows so far.
Yes, I agree.
Along with,
Adelaide Stratton?
Camille, who?
The one from Houdini and Doyle? She was pretty no-nonsense.
We haven't done that on this show yet.
Oops.
It's not canon yet.
Apologies.
Camille from...
Death in Paradise?
Yeah.
Can't believe you forgot the name of your favourite show, to be honest.
And I guess it was that girl from Private Eyes, although she was...
Private Eyes!
Not memorable, really.
No, but the more I watch Castle, the more it does remind me of Private Eyes.
Yeah, they're tonally similar, I guess, although I prefer the way Castle's doing it.
Yeah, but like the way that it's like using the sidekick to the detective, using their fame to get stuff done that the detective couldn't do themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, similar angles. Yeah. Rounding up the main cast, we have Molly Quinn as Alexis Castle, aka Castle Jr., his sort of strangely well-behaved daughter.
Yeah, at least they do reference the fact that she is too good a kid.
And Susan Sullivan as Martha Rogers, aka Ma Castle, his not well-behaved at all mother.
Is it his mum or his wife's mum?
Oh, I thought it was his mum.
I thought it was his mum as well, but he said something towards the end of this episode that sounded like her mum was away working, so I got custody.
Castle's father and she had a one-night stand, and she gave birth to Castle, so I guess... She's probably talking about how she got custody of Castle there.
No, he was talking about how he got custody of his daughter. But maybe he... I don't know. I could not tell you. I'm sure we could look it up, but what's the point?
I have just looked up her Castlepedia page, at least.
Go on.
Well, I just told you. She had a one-night stand with Dad Castle.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were just making that up. Sorry.
No, I looked it up.
Well, we never look things up. So you've gone off
with
book.
With a man whose name she never knew.
Sexy.
She told her son, Rick, that she had no idea who his father is.
I bet it's like Barry Manilow or someone.
How do we know his last name's Castle then?
That's a very good point.
What the fuck?
Maybe that's like just his pen name.
Yeah, maybe. Because the dad is called Jackson Hunt.
Oh, do we meet his dad?
Yeah, he's a page on this. He's a CIA agent.
Of course he is.
Full name, Richard Edgar Castle. Okay, and his birth name, Richard Alexander Rogers. Okay.
Right.
We're solving all sorts of mysteries about Castle.
Glad we cleared that one up.
Yep. Our episodic cast in this episode are the victim, who, much like in the last episode, was a non-entity and does not have a credit listed on the IMDb page. So no one, I guess, as Sarah Manning, a nanny in sort of the Manhattan area.
Must be. Maybe they used a dummy.
Yeah, but I guess maybe like just someone on staff. Because I think the only time we saw her was in a tumble dryer.
And also on the autopsy board.
Oh, yes, yeah. Sarah Drew as Chloe Richardson, another nanny and the victim's friend. She played Dr. April Kepner in Grey's Anatomy and was the voice of Stacy, the high-strung member of the fashion club in Daria.
Oh.
You know that one with the pig, the one with the pigtails?
Kind of.
In one episode, she gets really, she starts hyperventilating because she's realizes she's wearing stretch pants.
I do not remember that.
Okay. Daria is a good show.
It is a good show. I used to enjoy watching it when it was on TV.
George Newbern and Jane Brooke play Mr. and Mrs. Peterson, the victim's employers. George played a character called Charlie in Scandal. I don't watch that show, but he seems significant from the impression I got. And he's voiced Superman in a variety of animated shows.
What an amazing credit.
Jane was Dr. Diane Grad in 100-plus episodes of Chicago Hope and has a credit as JFK High School teacher in Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Amazing.
And then one more little unit to round out the cast is Jason Brooks and Melinda Page Hamilton as Ian and Diana Harris, other people who live in the same building and employ Chloe, the victim's friend, as their nanny.
Right.
Jason was Sean Monroe in Baywatch and Romulan Helmsman in Star Trek 2009.
Was he like a recurring character on Baywatch?
Yes.
How the mighty have fallen.
And Melinda was Anna Draper in Mad Men.
Oh my god, was she?
Yeah.
I did not recognise her.
I haven't watched Mad Men yet.
Oh, well. Get ready.
I should. I like that Jon Hamm.
You absolutely should. It's a really good show.
I've also been meaning to watch Masters of Sex.
Oh, that's also good. And if you start watching it, then I might actually continue watching it because I got bored between seasons.
Because they had Wesley Snipes on My Dad Wrote a Porno recently. And he's Masters, apparently.
Oh, that was a really funny episode.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
I was picturing... Oh my god,
I did not realise he was Wesley Snipes. Okay.
Martin Sheen is who I was picturing the whole time, I think. Wait, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Who's Charlie Sheen's dad?
Michael Sheen?
No, Rob. Michael Sheen was Wesley Snipes, and Martin Sheen was the president in The West Wing.
Well, their names are very similar.
Yes. Anywho, what are we talking about?
Fuck knows, to be honest. Mad Men.
Oh yeah, Masters of... Yeah.
Masters
and
of Sex.
And Castle.
Yeah.
So we open with an ominous shot of a tumble dryer, tumble drying. It's a front loader. As Pink's, what's it called? I Want to Start a Fight? Something like that?
Yes.
And I have that song on my iTunes. I'll check its name. As So What by Pink is blasting in the soundtrack.
I would not have known that was the name of it.
No, I always forget it. It's a good jam.
Is it?
It's got a good beat with that na 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 na.
It's true.
And that's sort of... I guess you'd call it like a cold open, but it's just the one shot, really.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really count. It's just an establishing shot, maybe.
Meanwhile, down at the station, Castle's filling out his paperwork so that he can accompany Beckett on various capers.
This seems like it's really just to, like, establish... I was going to use the word assuage, and I was like, what context is
that? That is a word, but I don't think that's right.
Well, I was going to say, like, assuage the audience's, concerns about
that he'll sue
about whether that would be a thing. Like, it just seems like a setting it up to be like, this is not a plot we're gonna follow, but then I couldn't figure out the way to phrase a sentence use whether assuage or if that's how you pronounce
it. I know what you mean. So as he's doing that, Beckett gets the call to go and solve some crimes.
In fact, the very same crime that we saw in the establishing shot.
What,
coincidentally, that's the one that she got assigned.
Wouldn't it be great if she was just doing, like, traffic duty or something that day?
It would.
Sorry, Castle, I gotta go. There's been a car theft. So she goes and checks out the crime scene, and it's in the laundromat at the bottom of a big old apartment building.
And there's an old lady there who she immediately suspects of murder.
You're saying the old lady killed her because she didn't take her laundry out of the machine?
But no, the old lady just found her because she went to take someone else's laundry out of the machine. One of the cops goes on for a bit too long about how you shouldn't take other people's laundry out of the machine.
Yeah, there's a brief argument about the etiquette of, like, communal dryers.
I do honestly have problems with it as well.
What's your stance on the issue?
That you shouldn't touch other people's clean clothes.
What if it's been there for days, though?
Well, then it'd be even grosser because it would smell all musty.
Yeah, but you want to get your laundry done.
I don't know. I mean, like, because I live in a share house, I just don't touch other people's laundry.
Fair.
I just, yeah, like I have a weird complex. I just don't want other people touching my underwear, even though it's clean, weirds me out.
With their dirty hands.
If it was like just towels, it would be fine, but it's just the fact that it's my clothes that go on my body, which is weird because towels surely is weirder. I don't know.
Towels is weirder.
God. Life, hey.
So, yeah. Castle shows up all of a sudden. Oh, and we learn that the victim was a nanny, and her name's Sarah Manning.
Yeah, so Castle just pops up and's like, oh, you thought I was going to do paperwork.
Yeah, fuck you. No one gets me to do paperwork. No one puts Castle in a corner.
There were a lot of points.
I didn't realise.
Go on.
I didn't realise that line in Not Footloose.
Dirty Dancing
is literally about someone being put in a corner.
Someone called Baby.
Yeah. I thought it was like smack talk about like, no, you're not gonna...
Metaphorically put them in a corner?
Yeah, you're not gonna... I'm dangerous when you back me up against a wall. Back off, man.
Yeah, nope. She's sitting in the corner.
And no one does that.
No one does that.
So Castle is wearing a big old red coat and Beckett's wearing a blue jacket. So they have such symbolism going on.
Oh.
Demonstrating their conflicting natures. And also in a lot of like Power Rangers type shows, the red and blue ones are always rivals.
Oh, interesting. I guess that makes sense. It's easy colour wheeling.
Mm-hmm. I think that comes from the Japanese folklore about like red and blue Onis.
What's that?
It's like a demon and there are red ones and blue ones that don't necessarily get along. I don't really know the details.
Oh, okay. I just know they're normally the colours that you put Capulets and Montagues in Romeo and Juliet.
Ah. So they go and question the victim's employers.
So the
Petersons.
The mum was at work and she got a call from the school saying that they had to, or the nanny hadn't come to pick up their son. So then she had to go do it.
Yeah. And like they address the fact that they have a son in such a rudimentary way where the only time we see him, they are literally closing the door to his bedroom to keep him out of the episode.
It was very symbolic.
I don't think you have to pay child actors if they don't speak.
That seems wrong.
Or possibly just not as much. So
That's the same with adult actors. Non-speaking roles get less money.
Yeah, yeah. So that feels like a very calculated decision to not have to pay one more actor.
No, that's fair.
And they're like, we still haven't told him that his babysitter was murdered.
Yeah, because that's... How do you?
Might want to get around to that at some point, though.
I mean, I suppose it was only the day of.
They could just tell him that, like, she was stealing from them or something, so they fired him. Fired her. You know, that's a good thing that good parents would do.
I was thinking that. I was like, why don't you just lie and say that she's not working for you anymore?
Yeah. Say that she's gone to jail for murder.
That big jail in the sky.
So they ask when the last time they saw her was, and Mrs. Peterson answers in a way that immediately had me convinced that Mr. Peterson was sleeping with Sarah.
Oh, really?
Because she says, my husband saw Sarah last night when he got home.
Oh, I did not pick up on that.
And then I've written in my notes, husband is definitely sleeping with Sarah. But I was wrong, as it turns out.
Yes, well. This episode did have many a twist and turn, and I was...
This episode is a tangled web of red herrings.
I know, I was so here for it, though. I liked it.
It's like the apartment building in New York with the most complicated sexual relationships.
I bet they're all like that.
Oh, Castle keeps insisting, like, in a really irritating manner that, oh, it was probably someone the victim knew, because that's usually the way it is. So it was definitely someone she knows, and probably someone you know too, guys. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that was really... He fucking irritated me a lot in this episode.
Yeah, because he was just sort of pointedly being irritating
yeah,
the whole time.
Yeah, like, more than once, I was like, Castle, more like arsehole, and then I laughed to myself a lot.
So we learn that she broke up with her boyfriend Brett, or is it Brent?
Brent
about a month ago, and that her parents don't know that she's dead because they live in Atlanta.
Also,
and
you've not talked about the fucking irritating narrative web that Castle weaves at the police station where there's literally...
We haven't gotten there yet.
Haven't we? Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's the next scene.
Okay, then you've forgotten nothing.
Thank you very much. And we also established that her mobile phone is missing.
So we can't check her mobile phone to find her parents' number.
But they take her bag anyway because they want to borrow her phone. I mean, I guess that's what you'd do if you were the police. It just felt weird that they were just leaving with her bag, though.
Yeah, it did feel weird.
But anyway, now we are back at the police station and they are examining the elevator surveillance footage, your favourite piece of evidence.
Absolutely. Nothing comes of this.
Yes, it does. It's not a smoking gun, but It establishes important things about the case.
Oh, okay. So no one else got in the elevator. And yet, at the end of the episode, they had more elevator footage. Where did that come from?
It was the same footage. No one else got in the elevator and went all the way down to the laundry floor, which is what they were looking for at the start.
We'll come to this when we get to the other footage. Maybe you will explain it to me. Okay.
The victim gets in the elevator, goes down to do laundry. A few minutes later, she comes up with the laundry submitted. Then 40 minutes later, she goes back down. And in that period, the only other person who took the elevator to the laundry floor was the old lady who finds the body.
Yes.
So, then Castle starts, like, doing his one-man show.
Yeah, like, honestly, just the most ridiculous length of time where he's just giving a very convoluted narrative about the guy in 8B, you know, he watches her and he knows what time she does laundry, and then he, you know, at first it's just a game, and then he goes down to see her and he looks at her lifeless body and just wishes that she'd noticed him, and then he goes back to being invisible.
He goes into it with the angle of basically everything, what I imagine is going to be a running theme for him with this show, where he starts it with the, I think this would be what happened, because that would make a good story.
Yeah, like, I get it, but I also get the police's angle of, like, not everything has a good narrative structure.
Yeah, but as we learn, he was kind of right in that it was someone in the building, but not someone who lived in the building.
No.
What if it was the kid she was babysitting?
I did think that for a while.
They haven't told him, but they don't need to, because he's a murderer.
Yeah, but then I was like, it's probably a bit hard to get that through, to be on
standards and practices.
Yeah.
So Castle takes a bow. There's rapturous applause from all the other police officers. Then we cut back to home, and Castle Jr. is cooking.
No, she's tidying up after her grandma.
Oh, sorry, my mistake. They're in the kitchen, though.
Yeah, because there's a whole bit about how she, of course, she cooked dinner and left the mess for everyone else to clean up.
Yeah, and Castle explains that he grabbed a slice on the way home, and his daughter says, "You really are turning into a cop." And he spins around, eyes full of hope and glee, and says, "Really?"
That was really cute, though.
Castle is, this is just his midlife crisis, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like he so desperately wants to play dress-ups as a cop.
Yeah, he's literally playing cops and or robbers.
Genuinely, that's a good point.
And we also learned that Mark Castle once played a crazy homeless person on NYPD Blue.
Haven't we all?
And then she just sort of like dunks on him a bit, which is basically all she does on this show.
Yeah, like that's her role, is like the eccentric alcoholic mother. I don't think it's ever established she's an alcoholic. I'm just also picturing her as Lucille Bluth.
Yes. Castle also makes an offhand remark in this scene about how he thinks this could be the plot of his first novel.
But
so
he's already, I think he means the first novel of the new series.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry. How does this, is this true crime or?
Well, I think he takes the situation but then embellishes it.
Because how does he not get, in what world does he do this and not get sued for defamation?
That's a good point. But you could, surely you can be like inspired by true events.
Yeah, no one in this thing, it represents persons living or dead, et cetera,
exactly.
And I don't think anyone's really going to be probably prescribing a particular level of reality to the Nikki Heat series.
Oh, God, yeah, it's such a bad name. It reminds me of that bit in Lost where there was the really terrible cop show that someone was on.
I don't know.
I know like two people listening are going to be like, yeah.
And you, do you know specifically which ones?
I am assuming Leah and Patrick.
Right. What was the name of his previous protagonist? Like Eric Storm or something? Jason Bourne.
That must have been where my brain was going. Yeah, I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure it was like Eric Storm.
I don't think it was Eric, but I think it was a boring white man name.
Like Eric. I'm sure it was Eric.
I thought it started with a D or a J.
I'm investigating.
I thought so. I heard typing. That's why I stopped talking.
According to Fillion, the character's name Rick Castle was noted by the show creator as sounding like Rich Arsehole.
Well, he is, isn't he?
And says that this reflects his character. He describes Castle as being a bit of a douche, with Peter Pan syndrome stemming from a lack of a real male adult role model in his life.
Yeah? My initial thought was like, I feel like you're ascribing a bit too much gravitas to the character of Rick Castle. Also, it doesn't sound that much like Rich Arsehole.
You calling him arsehole earlier.
Yeah, but...
Derek Storm.
Derek. I was right.
So was I almost.
What did you say, Eric?
Which is to say I was wrong, but I was very close to being right.
What the fuck were we talking about before this?
They go to the autopsy scene.
Oh, yep. So there's the lady that Castle chatted up last week to get information.
Mm-hmm. Not Bones.
What?
Not Bones. She's not Bones, but she does what Bones does.
Right, okay, yes. I thought you meant to get information and not Bones, and I was like, yeah, why would Castle be getting Bones?
They go to get some bones to solve the mystery.
And then I was like, did you mean that he wanted to, like, bone down with her, so he was going for...
No, they're going to roll the bones and perform some low-key voodoo foretelling, because it was in the bones that I'm going to die tomorrow and a man with a scarred face is going to kill me.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
No, it's the same examiner as before, and she likes Castle.
So she thinks it was head trauma that killed her from the bleach bottle, and then she fell and hit her temple on something.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
Interestingly, she'd had sex with someone minutes before she was murdered, probably.
Or within the hour, at least.
It's hard to tell because of the tumble drying.
Yeah. They're pretty sure it was consensual, just because there are no signs of the normal sort of, I guess...
abrasions, etc.
Yeah, that would come with...
usually indicate assault. And also, there was spermicide in her bits.
Indicating that whoever she slept with wore a condom. And that's how they know that she slept with someone.
I didn't think all condoms had spermicide or lubricant on them, though.
Evidently, these ones do.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that seems like a weird... I would have assumed that she would have had to have used spermicide herself. But I don't really know a lot about how spermicide works. This is going on what I learnt in human bio in year 11, so...
Yeah, likewise.
Times have probably changed since then.
Am I going to tell a story about a weird, like, sex ed video I watched in high school now?
Of course you are! God, why are you even asking?
It was like this really weird sort of role play thing where you saw the perspective of sex from the perspective of the... of an individual sperm and also an ovum.
Okay.
But it was like a... what was that kids' news show? Was that a thing where, like, kids would have a microphone and go around, like, interviewing people as, like, some sort of initiative?
Probably. It sounds like a thing.
Let's say kids' news was a thing and call it that. It was like a person with a microphone was standing in a very, like, bad, like, Fantastic Journey-style recreation of the inside of someone's body, talking to... a man in a papier-mâché sperm costume who was like, ah, they'll need more than a condom to stop me. They'll also need some spermicide.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was really fucked up.
That sounds horrifying.
So that's what I always think of when I hear the word spermicide.
No, understandable. That would scar me for life as well.
Yeah. Anywho, they pull the cell phone records from her phone, which they still haven't found, and determine that she has dozens of incoming calls from the same prepaid phone, but the outgoings to that number stopped months ago. Evidently, she was screening her calls from this number.
So who could that be?
Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just Brent. The boyfriend. They pull him into the office. He looks like a boy wizard.
Yeah. Little baby-faced, curly-haired thing.
Hello, Governor. Have I committed some crimes?
He has not, probably. We're not sure.
Consider yourself under arrest. Consider yourself in for questioning.
Your alibi seems so strong. It's clear we're going to let you go.
Yes.
That's the whole scene.
Pretty much. Castle does, like, go on a weird monologue about, like...
some girl that he couldn't get over and got really drunk.
Yeah. And he didn't even love her. Imagine if he did. Because they play his voicemails that he was leaving Sarah, because he's like, oh, we broke up, it was a mutual thing. And they play his voicemails, which are being like, hey, just call me. Call me, you bitch, you damn slut.
Now, the reason he's calling her a slut is because she left him for someone else.
Yeah, that's basically all we get from the scene. Also, she has a friend called Chloe, who we talked about in Persons of Interest.
Yeah, so this is where we learn about Chloe, so obviously she's the next person on our list.
And his alibi is pretty solid, because he was at work where they have cameras and sign-in sheets. And then after he explains that, his attitude escalates really quickly, where he's like, I didn't have anything to do with this. Am I under arrest or something? After he was, you know, if understandably distraught, pretty reasonable for the rest of the scene.
Yeah, I did think he was, like, unnecessarily belligerent, because surely when you know that you're innocent, the thing that you would do is just cooperate with the cops so they don't think you're being defensive and are therefore actually a suspect.
Yeah, Brent. So Chloe is another nanny in this building, and she got Sarah her job in the building.
They're all friends from university.
College.
Is that the same thing?
Yeah, but they call it college in the Americas.
Well.
Well, well, well.
So we head up to the park to meet Chloe.
Yeah, this is the playground that all the nannies from the building go to, someone says in like a really blatant piece of exposition.
It takes Castle back to when he used to take his daughter to the park, because there's also a weird through line about how his daughter never had a nanny because they wanted him to mess her up rather than a nanny.
Yeah, but how many nannies are in that building, do you think? I don't know much about, I guess New York is pretty high density housing, but it feels like a very strange line to me.
Sorry, I was legitimately thinking about how many nannies there would be in the building.
I want your answer on my desk by tomorrow morning.
I guess it would be like that and the surrounding building, surely.
Yeah, I guess so. So, they speak to Chloe. She last saw Sarah getting coffee before work on the day of the murder, and she reveals that Sarah had been staying late at the Petersons, but only on the nights Mrs. Peterson didn't come home in time for dinner.
Dun, dun, dun.
What could that mean? Was I right? Was she having an affair with Mr. Peterson? No.
Because?
They go question Mr. P at his office or whatever. I assume he's a lawyer or something. And he denies having an affair. And then they press him like very slightly and he immediately caves. But then they're like, so why'd you do it in the laundromat? And he was like, what?
And then he reveals that he was having an affair, but with someone from work. So that's why she always had to stay back late on the nights that he was meant to be home for dinner, because he was off boning down with his secretary.
That is literally how I was going to phrase it.
Perfect.
Yeah. What could that mean? Then who could have done it? Not him, but then. They're back at the station doing some dumb bullshit that doesn't matter. And then I think it was Esposito, one of the other cops who doesn't really get any characterization, but is usually the one engaging in some sort of dumb bit.
Yeah.
Reveals that someone else's alibi didn't check out. Who could it be? Guess, Beckett, guess.
She doesn't guess because she doesn't like games.
No, she's too serious and professional. It was Mrs. Peterson.
So she must have found out that her husband was having an affair with Sarah, except that he wasn't, but she must have assumed that and killed her.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
I mean, not so much reasonable as plausible.
I mean, yes, that seems like a reasonable deduction to make.
Just as long as you're not advocating murder, that's
No, no. Her alibi was that she was at work when it all occurred, but they got in touch with her assistant and said she was unreachable and not in the office that day.
So where the fuck was she?
Turns out, she had found out about the affair, but because Sarah told her, because Sarah was really guilty about keeping a secret and Dad Peterson was paying her extra for it.
Which, I mean, you know, if you're a nanny, I feel like taking the extra money where you can.
It's probably not great rates, honestly, in the Babysitter's Club.
Yeah, exactly.
Babysitter's Club Band.
Babysitter's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah.
That would have been a great name for this episode.
That's what we can call our podcast episode.
Perfect.
Anywho, that would be a great name for this episode because all the babysitters are lonely hearts, apparently.
Yeah, basically.
Shit. So she wasn't murdering Sarah that afternoon. She was going to her attorney to get divorce papers drawn up.
And obviously couldn't say that in front of her husband because he doesn't know yet.
Yeah, gotta surprise him with it, I guess, because you can't just tell someone you want a divorce.
Probably not when you're that rich and powerful.
But I mean, like, he's going to find out eventually, and, like, proceedings won't start until he knows, so you may as well just tell him. Because communication is the foundation of any good relationship.
Well, if they were good at communication, they probably wouldn't be getting divorced.
But it's beholden on them to maintain as positive a divorce as possible since they have a kid, and neither of them are, like, overtly abusing the other one, so there's no safety concerns there.
All right, Mr. Psychology Degree.
Nope.
Nope, English literature and politics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's me that has a psychology degree.
So anyway, back in the castle cave, he's stolen some more evidence. He's burnt a DVD from the security cameras and is watching it. And then one by one, Ma and Daughter Castle come by and watch, and they all come in and assume he's watching racy videos.
Yeah, which is wildly inappropriate to be watching racy videos in your kitchen with other people around.
I thought he was in like his office.
Oh, was he? I don't know. I just assumed he was in a communal area because everyone else
came in. I just assumed it was a sort of office area. Yeah, but I feel like he has no privacy in his house because these people just exist to, like, do bits about him.
That's a good point.
So he's watching this footage over and over again, and he realizes that the second time he gets in the elevator, the ride is 5 seconds longer than the previous time.
And that's just not how elevators fucking work.
Apparently not.
But also, there are a billion nannies in this building, and you're honestly telling me that between, like, 12 and 12:50, no one else... Nope, they did use a lift. Don't worry. But okay. No one got on any other floors. That seems unlikely.
Like, every time everyone was riding solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's like an express elevator once you get it going. Because that seems like a really good design piece.
I would love that. But it would also be really annoying while you wait for an elevator.
And the other thing that Castle notices is that the first time she goes downstairs to the laundromat and comes back up, she has her cell phone in her hands. But then the second time, she doesn't. So the cell phone should be somewhere in the building, in the floor that she went to the second time, right?
Right.
So he and Beckett go and stand in the elevator as he's explaining this. And just as he comes to, like, the punchline of its explanation, they reach that 5 seconds longer point and they arrive at the 15th floor, which is how much longer 5 seconds took to get to.
You phrase that sentence so badly.
I know, right? I'm having a bad time.
Okay, you know what? You got me. I can't think of a better way to say it.
He's explaining the 5 seconds longer thing, and as he's finishing his explanation, that extra five seconds in the lift ends, and they arrive at the 15th floor.
We got there. We did it.
Yes. He decided to start knocking on random doors.
To figure out who it was that she was sleeping with on the 15th floor.
Yeah, the door opens. It's Uncle Leo from Seinfeld. He does some bits for a while. He asks to sleep with Beckett, you know, the usual.
Bits.
Yeah, he is not in this episode again after this.
No, he's literally just there to make jokes about how old people can't have sex.
Yeah, great. Because they know, for some reason, they know that she was sleeping with someone on this floor. Oh, because she had sex, right?
Yeah. But then just as they're like, okay, well, I guess we can't knock on every door, Becca and her mum are there, and Becca is Chloe's charge, and Chloe is Sarah's friend who got her the job in the building.
Yes.
So they're like, maybe she went to visit her friend Chloe. And then in one of the most obvious shots in the world, they go into the house, and Chloe's dad gets up, and it's just like a lingering shot of him with like a half-unbuttoned shirt and messy bed hair. Just
half a beard on his face.
Looking all disheveled.
He's like season one Andy from Parks and Rec.
But, like, a bit better groomed.
Sure. You know, when Andy was, like, a real piece of shit in early Parks and Rec?
Yeah, but this guy looks like a, like, musician piece of shit, which he is.
Andy's a musician.
Oh, fucking, you don't have...
He just had two broken legs, Regan.
Yeah, but this guy looks like he works out, which Andy in season one of Parks and Rec did not look like.
Okay, so he looks like Andy in season one Parks and Rec by way of...
Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah.
Chris, yeah. We got there.
We nailed it in one.
Beckett is asking reasonable cop questions, and Castle is like, can I use your bathroom, please? And then he goes and snoops around in the bathroom
they
and finds...
They do bits about, like, oh yeah, you never think about when cops go to the bathroom.
He finds condoms in their medicine cabinet. What a smoking gun for this married family to have condoms in their house.
Well, exactly, because they're married and they should only be having sex for procreation.
Oh, of course. Otherwise, it's a sin.
Exactly. I can't believe that you even would joke about that, Liam.
So Castle fixes his hair and flushes the bathroom to maintain the illusion. And then he comes back and Beckett is still having a conversation like right next to these people. And he starts sort of circling her like a shark and whispering, condoms. They got condoms.
Condoms
like,
in the bathroom.
What must they be thinking?
Yeah. Like, hey, these policemen broke into our house so they can steal some condoms.
And then it's not even necessary that he did that because he told her that because he immediately does the next thing, which sort of blows everything up, which is that behind Beckett's back, he calls Sarah's phone number and it rings and we hear So What by Pink.
The same song that was playing when we saw the body in the tumble dryer.
Yeah, it's coming from under the bed in the next room over.
Their bedroom.
But why would Sarah have been in her bedroom?
Especially because Mr. Musician was having a nap, so he didn't see Sarah because he was having a nap. So how did she drop her phone in the bedroom while he was having a nap and he didn't realize?
Yeah, that's unusual.
Super weird.
And furthermore, the evidence we have so far dictates that while he was having a nap, she might have been in that room having sex with someone.
Oh, that's weird that her and Chloe had sex in his bedroom while he had a nap and no one realised.
Yeah, huh?
We're just kidding. He was lying to
the
police.
She was sleeping with him. That's perjury, probably. I think that's lying in trial. Lying to the police is also probably a crime.
Yeah, that's a miscarriage
obstruction
of justice.
Obstruction,
that's the word.
Yeah, miscarriage of law.
I started saying misappropriation. I was like, no, that's not the word.
That's my burlesque name.
Oh my God, that's a terrible burlesque name.
Yeah. I only do like routines in like Indian headdresses and shit.
Yeah, you only do horribly offensive things.
Yeah, because I'm misappropriation.
I got it.
I know, I was being explicit. Let me be explicit sometimes. I was explaining it for the benefit of the listener who are all really dumb.
Liam didn't mean that, and he's very sorry.
Yeah.
You're all special snowflakes, and we love all of you.
You're all...
fine, I guess.
Moving on.
Yes. Yep, so we've established that that's what happened.
We basically just cut to, like, the police interview room now.
Have we figured out who actually killed her, though?
No, not yet.
Okay.
So, they're arguing with Ian in the interview room, and he admits to sleeping with Sarah, but he denies that he murdered her.
Like a murderer would.
He insists that Sarah left maybe 10 minutes before Chloe always gets back from taking his daughter to the park. Because she always comes back at 1 to give the kid their lunch.
But what a boring routine, knowing that you're going to be back exactly at 1 p.m. every day.
Yeah. And then just as they're like starting to get more information from him, his lawyer shows up and dick blocks the interview.
So that's a bummer.
And furthermore, the elevator footage appears to verify his story, because Chloe does indeed come back very soon after. But something strange about the way she comes back. What could it be?
There's no child with her.
Yeah, did she leave the kid at the park? Did the kid get kidnapped?
Well, I don't know.
I just have a note here. It must be a quote from the episode, because I don't know why I would have just written it. It's just, there are no coincidences.
Yeah, I feel like that's something they would have said in this episode.
Yeah. And somehow they also established that Chloe would have known that Sarah was in the basement at the time.
Yeah, because she also has the same schedule for doing washing every day.
Ah, right, yes. Because there's so much washing that must be done, because that kid's a real bedwetter.
Well, that's the thing. They say that she does his washing every day. Like, what? I've been by myself for a week and I don't even have enough clothes to put a full load on. And my clothes are bigger because I'm an adult.
Yeah, kid.
Anyway, I think basically that kid being a bedwetter is in fact canon. You've hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Put it in the file.
So this isn't adding up. They should go investigate Chloe, and they get to her house. And she has a really creepy photo of the Harris family, but with the mum cut out of the picture.
Now, listen, they make it seem like it's not creepy just that she has a picture of the family she nannies for in her personal home.
I mean, if she was really close with them, that might be a thing, you know?
No, wouldn't.
No, you don't think so?
No. That's creepy.
No.
That's having a picture of your employer in your home.
But when you're here, your family.
Where everybody knows your name.
I was doing Olive Garden, actually.
Oh, I don't know anything about Olive Garden.
It's a bad Italian restaurant, apparently.
Well, I mean, I knew that. I don't know anything about their marketing campaigns.
Okay, when you're there, your family.
Oh, that's nice of them.
And that means you are entitled to a share of the will when Old Man Garden finally passes away.
I think it's a lady, because Olive's a lady's name. Garden.
Yeah, that's fair.
When Lady Garden passes Madam Garden. Away.
As long as you're there, you're entitled to a share.
That's catchy.
Now that is a good slogan.
Also, that'd be a great slogan for like a tapas place.
Yeah, or like a pirate crew.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I like it.
Our pirate crew / tapas restaurant.
Our pirate themed tapas restaurant.
Called?
Booty.
Perfect. So they're like, oh no.
Oh no, Chloe, you get a whole treasure chest full of tapas.
Is that the name of the restaurant?
That's a really bad name. Oh. No, that's the...
Howdy, matey. Welcome to Oh No, You Get a Whole Treasure Chest Full of Tapas. Remember, when you're there, you get a full share, whatever I said 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, perfect. It's very catchy, I think it'll...
Well, so they realise that since Chloe's not there, she must be going to murder the Harris family right now.
Yeah, that was a bit of a stretch, but apparently a good one, because that is in fact what is happening.
Yeah, they get in, the door's busted open, because he's signed his life away, Castle gets to come this time. And so Mr. Harris is unconscious on the floor, and Mrs. Harris has locked herself in the bathroom with the daughter for their own protection. Chloe's not there.
Well, fuck, where is she?
Well, the doorman happens to buzz the room at that point and tells them that someone has let him know that there's a girl in the laundry room with a knife.
That must be our perp.
Yeah. Now, this was a kind of a pretty intense scene.
Yeah, I averted my eyes for a lot of it.
Fuck. What are they doing with this car?
Maybe you've been in purgatory the whole time.
Yeah, maybe I'm the car. Maybe the car represents my sins. Because of that time I killed that kid.
What?
Nothing.
Oh, okay, cool. Anyway, so we're talking about Castle.
Yeah. We're talking about The Castle, that Australian movie about an airport.
I'm pretty
airport
sure
or
we
something.
Made this joke last week.
Oh, fuck. So, yes, this is a scene in which Beckett is negotiating with this very unstable girl who, for a good portion of it, has a knife cutting into her leg.
Yeah, it was difficult to watch.
Yeah, I guess we won't discuss that in great detail in case anyone listening is not great with self-harm stuff. But she talks about how, like, she and Ian were in love, and like Ian would always tell her that that's Mr. Harris, that she would leave, he would leave his wife for her. But then she found out that Sarah was sleeping with him, and she didn't get it, you know? So I don't know how she got down to the laundromat without getting caught by the cameras.
That was the thing I was asking about before.
I guess she like took the stairs. Are there stairs? There must be stairs.
Yeah,
there must be. As long as there was a fire. In which case the whole security cam thing seems a bit redundant.
I agree.
Because wouldn't a murderer who knew there was a camera there always just take the stairs?
Yeah. That's why I was really confused when we were talking about the elevator footage before, because I was like, hang on, but they ended up with footage of her, I'm pretty sure.
And Sarah didn't really get that, according to Chloe, they were deeply in love, so when she turned around, she hit her on the head with the bleach, and then, like, realised what she'd done and got really scared, so she put her in the dryer.
Yep. Also, Chloe is pregnant.
Oh, yes, with Ian, because I guess he didn't use condoms with her?
Oh, yeah, that's a weird... Maybe that's why he started using condoms.
Maybe.
Maybe. Anyway, they get her to drop the knife and, yeah.
They take her away.
Yeah.
As they're watching that, Castle and Beckett have a debrief where Castle is like, that was a really good, like, sisterhood act you were pulling in there.
Sister Act 2, back in the habit?
Shut up. And Beckett responds, I wasn't running anything, Castle. What that guy did has consequences and he's just going to walk away.
Which is true and shitty.
Yeah, but he's getting divorced, that's something. But perhaps not enough.
Well, we don't know if he's getting divorced.
Well, someone said that there was probably a pretty heavy divorce coming.
Well, I imagine so, yeah.
Maybe the wife's into it.
She's into cuckolding.
I was going to say Polly, but...
Oh.
You know, whatever floats your boat.
Is there a female term whatever for cuckolding, or is it like a unisex term?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
That term has picked up a lot of annoying cultural context in the last couple of years anyway.
I know it from the tripod song.
Okay, it's basically become like the battle cry of the alt-right.
Oh.
Calling people like cucks.
Oh. No, it's a really funny tripod song, which you...
Oh, I know it, yeah.
So that's my whole context for it.
Yep, anywho, we cut to Castle writing, like, fervently, because he's been so inspired by this great case. And I skimmed what he was, you know, we get a brief pan across the computer screen, and the bit that I read said, Nikki Heat had been in love. That much was certain.
Yeah, but her heart had been broken before.
Just like Kate Beckett?
I mean, it's possible.
Could this fictional character be related to her at all?
I don't know. Maybe Castle's going to start writing, like, erotic fiction about Nikki Heat.
That does sound like a porn protagonist name.
Absolutely.
Maybe Nikki Heat will meet, like, Jeremy Fort or something, and they'll start an intense but brief romance.
Yes.
Tower.
Yes, that's better than
Mike,
Fort.
Mike Tower.
Or Dick Tower.
Yeah, there we go. So, while this is after that, Castle and Castle Jr. have, like, the emotional debrief for the episode where, like, the killer wasn't the person who I thought it was, but it's okay to be some surprised sometimes. That's the fun part. And then Castle is like, you surprise me all the time. And then she goes to bed and he sort of nostalgically looks at a photo of the two of them at the park when she was a babe.
Aww.
The end.
All right, let's mystery envelope this bitch.
Let's crack it out. Après vous?
18 minutes. It was the dad of the family that she nannies for.
Ah, 20 minutes. Mrs. P with the bleach in the laundry. That's the mum of the...
We were so close, but yet so far.
We swallowed those red herrings, hook, line, and sinker.
We did.
Yeah, it was a really weird constructed episode in the way that there was just this second family that basically played the same role as the first family, you know?
Yeah, it was a weird... set up.
And I guess that was a mechanism to have a second nanny kill her, but they could have even just, if they wanted to simplify it, they could have just had, like, they did, like, the afternoon and the morning shift.
That's true, yeah. I mean, if you're gonna pay your child actors, you might as well have cut out all the adults that you just hired.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, it was just so weird how both the dads were having affairs, and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I see your point. Well, what do you think about Castle? Is this a hot lead or a cold case?
I'm kind of cooling on Castle at the moment right now, all right. Honestly. Like, it's fine, but it's a bit... Like, it's probably the best of the comedy murder shows we've watched so far. But, you know, we've done a fair few of those in our first however many episodes, and I'm kind of in the mood for something different.
All right, well, let's mix it up then.
Okay, you agree?
Yeah. I'm lukewarm about it. Like, if you said you wanted to keep watching it, I'd be like, fine. But I'm not devastated that we're not.
All right. So we'll be back next week with the fourth episode of Death in Paradise.
Oh, fucking no.
No, we'll find something fun.
We will find something fun. Or not fun, maybe. I don't know. It's up to us, not you.
This isn't binding, but we did talk about how we wanted to do perhaps something a little more action-y in the near future.
Yes, we just need to find it and then we can watch it.
Yeah. Or maybe something like Jonathan Creek would be good.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we do on this program?
Well, our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years.
Sure is.
Our Twitter is at MysteryTwinsDA. Our email address is mtdetectiveagency@gmail.com.
Friend of the show, Byron Wheeler, said he had a mystery of the week for us, and then when I told him to email it in, he said, but that's so much work.
Tweet it to us, Byron. We're there all the time. Yeah. So are you. Seen you.
We'll tackle it.
Absolutely.
No case, no big.
No big, and no yachts.
And we're not really twins.